spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
Show going. Right? We're live. Hi, my name is Danny Fisher. Thank you for tuning in today to the Mile High Show. This is a new segment called Kaleidoscope, and I am your host, Danny Fisher. A little bit about myself is I'm an artist and a musician, and I do dishes like everyone else. I'm a mother, and I act too, and I think you should be digging into your creative spirit as well. Today, I picked a very special guest. This is our third segment. This is our great friend here who is also an artist, and I can't even begin to tell you how many directions she goes. She's got her art. She's a very good promotional person. She's got wellness. She's a writer. And she's got some new adventures coming up. This is Melanie Benayet. Welcome.
Hi. It's good to be here.
So the way the show works, everybody, you know, we all love to plug our own artwork. And we all love to say, you can find me here in the website. And I want to hear all that stuff.
Sure.
So we'll do all of that. But the basis of the show, per se, is we get to know you, what you've been through, and you're really good at this. And that's why I picked you today, but also to inspire others if they have not been, you know, filling their creative wild oats.
Yeah.
Help them get there.
That sounds great. Let's do it.
Alrighty. So start with your plug and then tell me how you got to be who you are.
Okay. Well, I'm Melanie Benayet, and you can find me at melaniebenayet.com. Good luck trying to spell it. No, I'm just kidding. It's Melanie, MelanieBanayet. I am a fine artist, have been for, good Lord, probably over 30 years now.
Beautiful work.
Yeah. And I am also a holistic health coach. I work with predominantly with women. And now I'm going to be adding a little element to that using creative grief. Processes to help people learn.
So now that's actually, you said it wasn't per se a degree, but it's like a certificate or certification?
It is. It's a certification.
So it's wonderful to just see, even over the past 7 to 10 years, how the world has changed. And we're starting to recognize that creativity is one of the most important things for our health to get us going.
I mean,
you're handling the whole vessel with what you do. You're handling the outside forces and the stuff we put in our bodies, but it's great that you also see that.
Well, on a personal level, it's because that's what I've used pretty much my whole life to get through life, period. Yeah. And so I may as well add it as one of those healing processes to what else I do.
Great.
Yeah.
So you, it's up to you if you want to talk a little bit about your book. What I'd like to know is, you know, some people tell their story and they're like, oh, I've been a guitarist since I was 7 because my parents gave me lessons. And some people are like, I picked up my first paintbrush when I was 35 because I went to a private school and they didn't have art. When were you? For myself, I was in kindergarten and my parents came to see my class and it was Easter time and I made this cut paper bunny with like little gold carrot and all this. And the attention that I got and how everybody was so pleased with what I made is something that started to inspire me. And then there were other moments in my life where I knew I wanted to be an artist. How did this happen for you?
So the process for me was more of a healing process as a kid, as a little kid. Went through a few traumas as a young kid. And it wasn't until I was in third grade in Mrs. Johnston's class. She was an art teacher that was about 150 years old at the
nice.
Time.
Yeah.
She was great, had this long, gorgeous gray hair that...
we're both going to have someday, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I'm keeping it. It means wisdom in many cultures.
It's beautiful. Yes. Mine's growing in, nice. And probably because of her influence. She was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. But she noticed that I was using art as a healing process, even at that young age in third grade. And she kind of took me under her wing and started keeping me after class and saying, hey, let me give you a few other assignments. And that's how it all started for me. She was on a mission to help me get into more advanced classes that were for the older kids. And I realized that art was very important to me at a very young age and that whatever I was going to do in life, it was going to involve art.
Had to be incorporated.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So do you think with this whole Creative Greece counseling, do you partially attribute that to what you've learned from?
Absolutely. I mean, I think everybody can look back at their life and see that there have been small traumas and big traumas in their life. And for those who are really left brain or right brain, they can probably understand that having some way to express whatever pain or, you know, trauma that you've gone through in a way where you don't have to necessarily say the words,
right,
but you can express it in other ways, whether it's through music, writing, art, finger painting. It really doesn't matter, but it's just another way to express those emotions that are often very difficult to get out.
Right, and I know that when I went to school for art therapy, and like I said, it was a long time ago, and I had an issue where I had straight A's and I was getting through this college. It was very expensive. It was back east. But every book I read was written by one of the professors. There were no outside. It was a couple, a married couple, and I knew there was more than what there, because the only two things I really learned then was there's the part that art therapy, just the process of making, no matter what you're making, is therapeutic, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
And then there's the psychotropic, the creative visualization, like say in clay, you make a bowl, you fill the bowl with things you want in your life,
yes,
and then you're creatively visualizing. And I've done that project with tons of children, and some of them put a puppy in there or Cheetos, and others put, I want my parents to get back together.
Yes.
You know, like, not that it's always going to happen, but at least they voiced it.
Well, and when you're using art to explore those thoughts, emotions, feelings, whatever is going on inside of you, you have no idea what's really going to come out in,
yeah,
your creations. And then all of a sudden you step back and you look at it from a different perspective, and it all kind of comes together.
It's not, what did we used to say? It's always beautiful. You may not know what you're getting, but it's always beautiful.
It is.
Absolutely.
Oh, we have a cell phone thing going on.
Pardon me for that.
It must be very important.
It is very important.
Yeah, kids want to stay over and get red boxes. Super. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the creative grief counseling, a little bit about how you became an artist. I know that when I met you at Granite Mountain Brewing, that you told me how things had changed in your life. You changed careers, and that you were very ill at one point. That you were not—I want to say ill—but you had severe arthritis.
Yeah.
And you weren't feeling good, and you changed your entire life. Now, I have not read your book yet, so I'm not sure. Like, I know it probably tells you in this great book right here. Her book, Stretch Your Brave, Hack Your Story, which you can get on Amazon through the Mile High Show's website so that we can keep the lights on. So when you get on the Mile High Show website, click on the Amazon link and then order from there. I'm sure your book talks a little bit about that, but could you share with the audience?
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of people these days who are experiencing a whole plethora of different health issues in their life, and it actually happened to me when I went through a pretty nasty divorce. And it
right, because that never happens in real life.
No. mine was definitely not an amicable divorce by any stretch of the imagination. And that experience, if you're familiar with epigenetics. Epigenetics is the study of how our environment will influence our genes, our genetics. So
kind of like evolving through it.
Right.
But
so
it could be bad.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happens is diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis are something that is genetic predisposition in my family. But it didn't have to ever turn on. It was not, the switch never had to be turned on. But when I went through this divorce, it was like the switch, the amount of stress that I went through and my eating habits during the time because of the stress, everything was like this perfect storm. And it turned that switch on for my RA. And there I had been at that time 25 years professional artist, and all of a sudden I was unable to pick up my paintbrushes and paint, and my feet were also experiencing a lot of pain. Couldn't dance anymore, couldn't really hike, couldn't do a lot of things. My life had pretty much, the way I knew it, had stopped. And so I had to, it was like a real shock. I had to look at changing careers. It's like, what do I do at this point in my life? You know, this is what I love. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what I do the rest of my life. But I had to make a change. And I got interested in nutrition and realized, well, maybe I can fix this. Maybe I can fix this thing.
And let me clarify for the listeners, like, when we do this show, I do artists, I do musicians, I do chefs.
Yeah.
I do mental health workers, and part of the new nutrition part is an art form. It doesn't matter where it comes from.
That's right.
Heck, you could be an accountant and that could be your fine art. You never know. So
it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And a lot of people who get into nutrition are very, very creative people. So it was a whole new world that opened up to me. I learned about it, and I learned how I could reverse my RA, and I did it. And before I knew it, I had full use of my hands again. The pain in my feet went away, and I was back to doing art.
Did you struggle with believing that there was actually a change in yourself? Was it, even though you were working for it and you wanted it, did you struggle with believing it when it was coming?
I completely doubted that it was going to work for me. And that's the thing that a lot of people say, because, in fact, I had a friend, his name's Neil Walk, and he was a professional basketball player way back in the 1970s. And he gave me a book, and he said, read this book. It was a book on nutrition. And I said, well, okay. So I read the book, and all I could say was, I got about a third of the way through the book, and I said, well, that's just a bunch of BS.
Right?
I'm not going to do that. Can't do that.
Us healers hate to be healed sometimes, too. And when there's a traumatic situation, it's not only your body, and this has to do with finding your career or finding your gift, finding your light. Sometimes everything that hurt you is gone, and your brain kicks in and is still preparing because it's protecting. Back in the day, we lived as cavemen, and you didn't know if there was a dinosaur behind you. You didn't know when you were going to die, so you had to be on guard all the time.
Yep.
So there's this natural part in your brain that when things get better after the storm, sometimes it still wants to kick in there, and it's really, for me, was always a frustrating thing, like, because then I'd get mad. Why are you thinking like that?
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. And to be honest with you, after I read that, I closed that book after getting a third of the way through and said, not going to do it.
No.
I'm not going to do it. 3 years later, my RA was so bad that I decided to open the book again. And I went, okay, I'm going to read it with a fine-tooth comb this time. And I'm going to see if I can actually change this. And when I gave myself to it and kind of set my entire life up to follow this procedure, so to speak, it only took 6 weeks. 6 weeks, and my hand, I got used to my hands again. Now, to me, that was like no, that's like a miracle. Right. That's not true.
Maybe I was misdiagnosed in the first
place.
Yeah.
I screamed at my husband, Greg, you got to see this.
Wow.
It was pretty exciting.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, and that's one of those things when that happens to you, you just want to run out and scream to the world, this happened.
It works.
It works.
It really does.
And so does art therapy. You know? So does art therapy. It opens up your whole world of healing in a whole new way.
So in this book, you also have your artwork. Are they tied into certain verses? Is there any poetry? Is it mostly factual? Your story, but is there?
There is. There's a lot of beautiful quotes. There's some poetry in there. There's the stories behind the art. And so you get to learn what the inspiration was behind it. And then there's 15 other case studies that where I worked with clients and helped clients explore their stories of how they got to where they are with their health and what they could do to start turning that around.
So you've got proof in there, too.
There's a lot of proof in there. And it's not me that changes their lives. It's me kind of helping them open the door to what it takes to change their lives and just guiding them.
Right. And this is all in her book right here.
Right here.
You can get this book through the Mile High Show website if you click on the Amazon link. And her book is called Stretch Your Brave and Hack Your Story. So there's that. So when you got back into artwork after it being so long, how was that for you?
Well, I realized it changed a little bit because it had been 5 years. When I finally put down the brush and packed up my studio, and which was a very emotional experience, and it took a little bit of grieving to get through that process, and then I gave myself to the health coaching. But when I got better and started painting again, of course, then that passion comes back. It was like opening Christmas presents that had been hidden for, you know, years. And I went, oh, my God, look what I still have. Oh, my God, I completely forgot I had this. And look at, you know, oh, my paints. I still have these paints. They're so great. It was like being a little kid in a candy store. And then when I hit the canvas again and I started painting, it had changed. And my color palette had changed. Didn't see that coming, which was interesting. It was very interesting. So, and then my passion of how I want to use my art in the world also shifted. I mean, there was always that desire to reach people through my art, but now I want to help people actually explore their stuff through their own art. And not everyone always says, well, I'm not really an artist. It's like, yeah, you don't have to be an artist.
Oh, I never buy that.
Yeah.
Matt Santos himself is a wonderful photographer, and I've called him an artist a couple times, and all I've heard is, no, I'm not.
I know I'm not.
Right.
Yeah, I know. This is what I love. I'm excited to start doing workshops. That will probably start in about a year.
That's awesome. And this girl promotes like a crazy woman. This lady covers everything, and she's got price ranges in her artwork as small as, how much are your cards? Like
$3? $3.25.
$3.25, yes. All the way up to a couple grand if you have it and you just bought a fancy custom-made house. She's got everything in between.
I can set you up.
Right. And the way I met her was because I'm the arts coordinator at Granite Mountain Brewing, and she had already set up a show before I started, and I met her, and I'm like, oh, I should do my job. I should go help her, like, get people in. And I could have taken a nap the entire time. This lady packed the house and just had everybody coming to her. I have not been to your shop. Do you want to tell us the address of your shop, the website, and what goes on there?
Okay, so I'm a mobile artist, like a lot of artists. I do not actually have a gallery, so my work moves around.
Your wellness stuff, too?
So my health coach practice, I work out of my home, mm-hmm. and I work with people one-on-one in my home office. They can meet me in person. We can do it by phone. We can do it by Skype. I've worked with people all over the country, mm-hmm. Which is what's so beautiful about technology.
Right. I had a life coach in Pennsylvania, yeah. like to coach me through getting here and getting established. Yeah. And every week I just chime in with him, and it helped. Did wonders. Yeah.
Well, I think what's so wonderful about technology is it allows people now to find who they connect with better. So if you connect with someone in Pennsylvania as a coach, then that's who you're going to want to work with.
Yeah.
You know, so I find that people find me on the internet, the strange world of the internet.
You know, this lady yesterday, I made a Facebook friend, and she's also an artist, and she's from Hawaii, and we just had a quick conversation. She wanted to make sure I'm not a hacker, spammer, stalker, creeper.
Sure. Yeah.
And so we had a conversation, and she was a pleasant lady, had 6 children, you know, talked about forgiving and raising her kids right, and we made friends right away, and she said, always remember this, people meet because of good.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
It's true.
I believe it. it's amazing where I've met clients. You know, I facilitate workshops where actually my husband and I do this, and we work with adults who are exploring their own self, their changes, you know, things, changes that need to take place in their lives because yeah. their families have just gone through some big upheaval. And I meet clients there through these workshops that we do. And, you know, people say, hey, you know, can you coach me through this? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And most of these people are from all over the country. So you can be at the grocery store and meet people who just... People just...
Absolutely.
They need support.
They need to just start talking to each other.
They do. And it's all really about relationships. It's about finding someone that connects with you and can listen and help you through the rough times.
And I think part of your teaching... Well, teach you do also coaching and teaching and being therapeutic. I still believe you're a teacher, you know?
Yeah.
And what happens when you get rid of that knowledge, what you have, you share it with someone else. I know that there are some artists that are very protective, and we all want to protect our brand. We all want to protect what we make.
Yep.
And, you know, we don't want people using it for free unless we choose to, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
It's depending on the artist. But when you release all the knowledge that you have and share it with somebody else, I think you just get filled up with more.
You do.
And... So Melanie has come through her change, convinced herself it was the right thing to do, got support, gained support. I'm not sure, like, you notice you're around more like-minded, supportive people in your journey than you may have been at the beginning, you know, sassy divorce, and now, you know, you've got a good one, and you're always smiling and around great people. But we still second guess ourselves, and that's part of why I have this show, is because I want you to be able to be 80 at home and go, I'm running to the store to get some crochet needles and get my stuff and do something and turn off the TV and start living in the creative spirit. But some of the proof of how we, I quote unquote, sabotage ourselves. Sometimes we just need a little convincing, no matter where it comes from, whether we're asking a greater power or we're there with our supportive friends, we still second guess ourselves and have to level out and balance and find the answer. I know that when I walked into your speech over at Granite Mountain Brewing, you had spoke about, this is a great story. I love this and I can completely relate. Melanie took some paintings to the dump.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And then had a fit knowing that she still needed one. And tell them this story.
Okay. So, periodically, you know, I'll go through my, I guess, inventory of artwork and say, yeah, this isn't any good. This one's not good. This one's not good. And I think a lot of artists might do this type of thing. And
there's like nine layers under everything.
Yes. Because you only have so much storage space. Being an artist can be a storage issue.
Yeah.
But I had been working on this particular painting. And it was a painting of a mother and her two kids, a daughter and a son. And it was representative of me and my two kids, a daughter and a son. And I struggled with this painting. I realized that it was more emotional than I thought, because in my divorce, my kids end up living with their dad.
Yeah.
And I lost custody of them, physical custody. And as a woman...
That's a killer.
Yeah, a million stabs to the heart, it felt like.
And that's a killer. When your kids are even threatened in any way.
Yeah. So I couldn't do the painting. I couldn't express it, what I wanted to express in it. And I said, well, this one's going to the dump. I just can't do it. And so I put it in the stack in the back of my truck along with all these other paintings and took it to the dump here in Prescott, Arizona. And I don't know if you've ever been to the dump.
Oh, I have.
Oh, yeah. So it's really quite a traumatic thing.
Right?
So you
there's things there that nobody should have thrown away in the first place. They should have just hosed it off. And then there's just weird stuff you want to stay away from.
Right?
And they're all like in funky piles, like the same color, same shape. It's weird.
So... So I took this, and there's this big pit, and you just back up to it, and you unload your garbage. And so I'm unloading this stack of paintings up against the edge of this pit, and it's the one painting that I was struggling with was about halfway through the pile. And then when you're done, you get in your vehicle and you drive away. Well, I was done. I'm getting in my vehicle, and this bulldozer comes around the corner, and I swear it was like going 40 miles an hour. Of course it wasn't, but it felt
right.
like it.
But you're a tiny little ant, and there's a big yes, cat coming after you. Yeah.
So it's
you're coming, a daredevil.
Right. Oh, yes. Absolutely. And it's zooming around the corner, and it's making a beeline right for my stack of paintings, and all of a sudden I had a panic attack. And I had to get that one painting back out of the stack. So I ran over and started moving all these other paintings from on top of it, grabbed it, shoved it in the back of my truck, hopped in the truck, and went home. And I realized I wasn't done. And I know that I could have started a completely different painting with a blank canvas and redone this whole thing. But something inside of me said it had to be that painting.
And we've got to trust our gut instincts
yes.
so much more than typically we do. But that was a struggle for you. You almost didn't.
Right.
But you got it. You got it at the last minute.
I got
daredevil.
It. Yeah. I took it home. I scraped away at it. And I redid it. And it is one of my favorite paintings ever. It's one of my best-selling prints. And the thing about that painting was you can see the traces of the underpainting, the painting that was originally there. And so it was imperfect. It's imperfect.
Right.
And that was kind of representative of my life, you know, and all of us can say that, you know, our paths have been so imperfect. And I decided I'm going to leave it there because it's beautiful. There's beauty in all of these ugly, you know, rough, difficult things that we've gone through. So it's all there.
That's, I think, part of what art does for us, too. Just,
yeah.
I think you get to observe things in a different light of where you were, you know. What advice would you have for people just getting started? Like, what would you have liked to hear besides the art itself healing you and your nutrition changes? You had a friend that gave you the book. They were leading you to the path of your journey. But what are some other things or some things that you would suggest to someone that's still struggling with this? I mean, I have a friend, Eve Smith was one of our first segment. And Eve Smith makes beautiful art. And I tell her she doesn't charge enough. And she's an amazing painter. And she has two kids. She loves her garden. An amazing person. And she was worried about money, even though she paints on flagstone. And I'm telling you, some of these things should be $200. And she's selling them for $65. They're amazing because she's just that good of a darn painter.
Right.
And she is a little younger than me. She has kids. And she worries sometimes about the juggling and balance of living in your creative life and making sure you're providing, you know, it has to do with some outside forces, some inside ones, but we all go through this and things change for us all. But she took a job. She's like, I got to do it. I got to get a job. And I just sat there and went, okay, all right. So she got a job at Bonfire in Chino and worked there for 3 days and then turned around and goes, I have no time to do art. I told my boss, he's like, that's okay. I kind of felt it. And she went back to doing art all the time with this bigger zest. And guess what set her off? She was all about not doing art anymore because her family was poor and she wasn't going to make enough money. She had a friend that had scripture all over their bedroom. They have a fancy house. They're well off. And they had this beautiful room. And they said, I bought this canvas. Can you paint a tree like you did in my other room? And she's like, nah, I'm not painting anymore. And they're like, ah, come on. I paid you for the other one. The least you could do is, you know, like, do your thing. So they got her over there. She put the canvas up in the living room, and it was too dark. She took the canvas to the bedroom with all of these, like, inspirational words. Got it right so that the sun leaned on it the right way so she could actually paint this tree.
Mm.
And looked over, and I know this sounds silly, but there are some of these moments. And for Eve, it was this. She looked over to the TV, and the brand of the TV that was right next to her canvas said, I paintbrush art. So she's in a room full of scripture, and she was just like trying to convince herself, and she just started crying and coming into her own again, and now she's just kicking butt doing art, you know? So her friend helped her, you know, but what are some things that you would suggest or some things that you looked to for help in the process besides just the actual creative process of doing your art?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And for those of you who really want to embrace the artistic side of you, I know for myself, and everyone's journey is completely different, and how it unfolds looks completely different. But for me, I know that I've, and with other artists that I've connected with, it's always been, you know, you kind of have to lean on looking at other artwork that's out there. And you might, you know, practice their style. You might do just so that you can be in the process of creating. But what it took for me was kind of erasing everything I learned.
Yeah.
And kind of letting go of trying to be like somebody else. And, I mean, I went through college. I took plenty of art classes.
Right. They told me never to paint with a black outline, and that's one of my favorite things to do.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so to find that, I think you have to just clear the mechanism, so to speak. You have to
clean the palette.
You have to put away all of the reference items that you have, you know, because you have art books that you've been studying, you have your favorite artists, you have websites that you visit on a regular basis because you love that style. And I say, shut it all down, be by yourself, and explore what it is that you are and what it is that you want to express in your own way. And if it takes a while, a lot of, you know, ugly mistakes, what you consider as mistakes, if it takes a lot of that to get to find what it is that feels good to you and expresses your thoughts in your own way, I would say that's go for it. Just clear out all the stuff.
Get off up your butts.
Yes.
And live in the creative spirit.
Just
celebrate your life.
Just start going for it.
Thank you. The other side of that, now we were talking about, you know, you're a great marketer, and I want to talk about that a little bit. You're a great promote yourself type of person.
Sure.
And a very big people person. That's another side of it. But you can't be a great promoter and people person if you don't have an original product either. I mean, that's what you're talking about, is the soul of the art that you're putting out there and why you put it out there. On the other side of the brain, we've got to make a living. We've got bills. We've got children. We've got horses and dogs, all kinds of stuff. So we have to pay our bills. We also have art supplies. How long have you been such a kick butt promoter, and how did you get that way?
Wow. Okay. That's a really great question. And
you can shorten it if you want.
I will try and do this in a nutshell, because it is one of the scariest things for artists, because all we really want to do is be in our studio and not have to promote, and we want somebody else to take what we create and promote.
And we don't
want to
give them our money.
Right, but we don't want to give them money because a lot of us are starving artists when we're starting out, and I get that, and I know what that's like. So it really hurt. It was like a physically painful thing for me to tap into the left side of my brain and start to understand what it really means to promote yourself, what it means to market yourself, and what it means to value the work that you put out in the world.
Instead of just giving it away.
Right. Instead of lowballing yourself, you know, in the price ranges. And here's the thing. You're going to create artwork, and there will be people out there that will absolutely love your work. And you're going to doubt it. But trust me, there will be fans of your work.
This
and
is true.
So you create your work. And I would say find mentors. I would say find people who are out there and doing it and confident in what they're putting out in the world, confident in pricing their work at a fair price, not ridiculous, but enough to make a living or pay some bills or at least replenish your studio.
Be what you deserve and be the artist that gets paid. Be that famous artist.
That's right. Yeah. Live it and people will value it for what it's worth.
Can I tell you a story? We're just about ready to close. We've got a couple more minutes today, but I want to tell you a story about, God, what was I just going to say? Now I forgot because it's still here. We're here at the Raven Cafe, by the way, on Cortez Street.
Wonderful
here
Raven.
In lovely Prescott. It was something to the extent of the money. Oh, I bought a painting back from two people because when I first moved home, I needed money really bad. I had just moved across country with two dogs, two cats, two kids, and a minivan. Dropped them off. I had all time. Then I had to take a Greyhound to Vegas for another art show. It was really fun. The step of moving across country and changing our lives and the fear and the excitement. And I did all this crazy stuff, and I really needed money, like make sure that I had money coming in still. And I started making friends, and they didn't always have the money to pay for my art, which is fine. Certain people, you know, you're like, I love you, sure. Here's this. And other people, you're like, you can make payments till 2017, it's fine. But I actually really began to value myself more when I traded my painting for some $250 in haircut. And this painting's in a short film, like, but I enjoyed I enjoyed the lady. I just sold it last week at Bill's Pizza because I had a show there, and what happened was we went and got her haircut once, and every time we wanted to get the haircut, something was coming up in her life. And I wasn't judging, but it just seemed like, you know, $250, I used $50 worth of my credit.
Right.
And this painting's worth more. I sold it for $350. And it sat there, and I started, once I got stable and my house and my environment changed and I was more calm about living here, I'm like, look, I can't get to you, and I can't get to you on the weekends. I'm going to give you your $50 back and take my painting, and here's a couple stickers. And the lady was very cool about it, because if she had the money, she would have given it to me. She liked it. And it was just, it took me a good 3 or 4 weeks to figure out how I was going to do that, because I knew it was coming.
Interesting.
You know? And then that moment for me was like, and then stuff started selling like crazy, you know? And that's kind of how it works sometimes.
Well, and you valued it. I mean, there is a value to it. Yeah. And it means something to someone else to have it, and you have to start valuing it for yourself.
That's really actually going to Oregon in a middle school math teacher's classroom. That's what he wanted it for.
Beautiful.
That's totally cool. So again, I really want you to plug yourself, and then I'll say a couple things about the Mile High Show. And this is Danny Fisher. This is Kaleidoscope. This is my segment where I tell you to either keep making art and promote yourself and get out there, or start making art. That's what I'm here for. And I'm not just talking about canvas. I'm not just talking about painting or clay or music. I'm talking about making wine. I'm talking about cooking, the way you raise your children, who you work with, how you treat people, how you dress. That could be your art form too. We have fashion models, actors. So every week I will be doing a segment that talks to a local artist or musician or what I consider an artist, and we're here to inspire you. They're here to tell you their story and reach out to you so that you know who's in your community, who the people in your neighborhood are, but also to inspire you to keep plugging and keep living in that light, because Prescott's a great place.
Mm-hmm.
So again, where can we find you?
You can find me online at www.melaniebanayat.com, MelanieBanayat.com. And yeah, you can call my office, 928-239-5656.
Absolutely. And we've got her great book here, Be Your Brave, Hack Your Story. It's got her artwork, it's got beautiful quotes, and it's got her story of how she healed herself through nutrition and the arts. If you want to get that book, get on the Mile High Show website and tap on the Amazon link and get it that way, so we can keep the lights on. If you want to find me, if you want to suggest a guest for my show or find out more about what I do in your neighborhood and how I help artists, or if you want to know where my shows are, I'm Danny Fisher. I'm on Facebook, DanniFisher. You also want to friend the Mile High Show and Mile High Artist League. That's me. My website is www.dannyfisher.com. And it was a pleasure, Melanie. Thank you for coming today. Remember to keep living in the creative spirit.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you much.
She baited for the lime. She put the lime in the cooking. Now she drank and poured up. She put the lime in the cooking. Now she drank and poured up. She put the lime in the cooking. Now she drank and poured up. She put the lime in the cooking. Now she called a doctor, woke him up and said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve this bellyache. I said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve this bellyache. Now let me get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and poured up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and poured up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and poured up. Put the lime in the coconut, you called your doctor, woke him up, said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve his bellyache. I said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, you put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both together. Put the lime in the coconut and you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, drink them both up. Put the lime in the coconut and call me in the morning. She drank and poured up and got the lime in the coconut. She called it doctor, coconut. She said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve this bellyache. I said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, now let me get this straight. You put the lime in the coconut, you drink and poured up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink and poured up. Put all the lime in the coconut, you drink and poured up. Lime in the coconut, you're such a silly woman. Put a lime in the coconut and drink them both together. Put the lime in the coconut, then you feel better. Put the lime in the coconut, drink them both down. Put the lime in the coconut and call me in the morning. Woo, ain't there nothing you can take? I say woo, to relieve your bellyache. You say well, woo.
If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do. If you call me in the morning, I'll tell you what to do.